Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. A really great day here in the studio. We have our wonderful panel, and we're all catching up. Sarah yesterday asked me, she goes, well, the music bit's played a long time. What were you all doing in there between the breaks? And I said, I think just chatting. I think we just haven't seen each other in a really long time, and we're chatting. All right, we'll get going and try to chat less and talk more if that makes sense. It is the 29th of June, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock, and we welcome you all to join in and join in on the fun. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I think I'm okay.
Good. Check in, do all the preliminary check work, have the mechanics. Yep, I'm doing fine. Excellent. Mike Spain is with us. He is former Times Union associate editor, and our dear friend. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm just fine. I think I'm doing well.
Excellent. Okay.
You are, because you're generally regarded as the best person in the whole world.
Oh, well,
we do.
I don't know what's coming after that, but
why would you expect anything to come after that? Hey, look, it's not Friday, and Judith Enck is here. Judith Enck is the former EPA regional administrator, visiting professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics, and this is your first time back to the studio. We miss you. We are so glad you're with us. I mean, you've been with us every Friday, but it's great to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thrilled to be here.
Yes, I'm so happy you're here. Rosemary Armeo, also thrilled. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Great.
Rosemary Armeo is an investigative journalist, a UAlbany adjunct professor, and we have a lot to talk about this morning, so we'll get started. Let us go to, Judith, why is it so damn hot?
Sum that up.
Well, it's only going to get worse. I mean, the climate crisis is here, and as bad as it is now, next year and the following will be worse.
So here is my serious question, mm-hmm. I think somewhat serious question, which is we are here in the Northeast going through, I think my car was like 85 or whatever, but it's very humid outside, and it's just sticky and yucky and all that stuff. But that's normal summer weather for us. We've always had that. That's not terrifically unusual for a late June, early July day. But then you look out west and you see what's happening in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Pacific.
Cue Mike's T-shirt.
Oh, right.
Western Canada is burning up. 117 degrees, some of the highest temperatures. Just unbelievable. So what do we make of that and put that into a context of that's just not a weather fluke? That is something that is really serious.
Could be religious. Won't be water, but fire next time.
Well, fire will follow because the forests will be so dry, unfortunately. I mean, sadly, this is not surprising. This is what climate scientists have been telling us all along. The hottest years on record have all been in the last 10 years. And heat kills, you know, people who don't have air conditioning, people who have respiratory or heart disease, people who work outdoors. I mean, think of postal workers. And I was just driving over. There's a construction crew working, putting a house up. Yeah, farm workers.
Or the guys on
the
road.
Field. Yeah.
I know.
I mean, they will suffer with health consequences. So the climate crisis is here. I'm serious when I say enjoy this weather because this is a cool summer compared to what's coming. Our infrastructure's not equipped to deal with it. There have been power outages in the Pacific Northwest. And the question is, are we going to see a proportionate political response from businesses and policymakers? And so far, no.
Or is what happened to Jor-El going to happen here?
Jor-El
was Superman.
Superman. Yes.
Yeah, and he put the baby in the thing.
And the pod
sent him down. And then that world blew up. I always think of Jor-El.
So you
Marlon Brando in that movie, right?
Oh, is that
1976, it's the hottest since at least 1979 when we look at the temperature and the records that have happened. So I ask this seriously, Judith, but like, so what was happening in 1979 that would have caused that? And so is it cyclical? And And also, by the way, and I don't, I know I'm asking you meteorological questions, but what's a heat dome?
Yeah.
So, well, a heat dome is where the heat concentrates. It's what it sounds like. And you also have the heat island effect in cities.
Yes.
Because there's so much cement. So the temperature will be higher than if you're out in the country. This is a pattern. You know, climate change is not about weather. It's about a pattern in the climate.
Right.
And so, yeah, we had really hot days in the 70s and the 80s. We were having hotter days earlier in the summer and the hottest years on record since they started keeping track have all been in the last decade. So this is quite serious, and it's exactly what climate scientists told us will happen. And it's not just being uncomfortable. It's putting a real demand on the electricity grid. It's contributing to wildfires, drought. It's cascading.
I want to get to the California drought in just a second. This is a line from a New York Times article on this very subject. Climate is naturally variable, so periods of high heat are to be expected. But in this episode, scientists see the fingerprints of climate change brought on by human-caused emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases. A Washington State climatologist said that any definitive climate change link could be demonstrated only by a type of analysis called an attribution study. But it's a safe assumption to blame increasing greenhouse gases for at least some portion of this event. On global average, the world has warmed about 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit since 1900. When you have that warmer baseline, when you get these extreme events, it's just going to get much, much warmer. So then we look at California, just south, because, yes, Portland and Canada are the real, real hot spots, but California is just drying up. And I asked this question because I just finished a novel about the Dust Bowl. I mean, you have to think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The Lake Mead is the lowest it's been. The sources of drinking water are compromised. Farmers are sacrificing some crops in order to save others. Those fields and those farm workers feed the nation. This is extraordinarily serious.
So what do we do about it?
Apropos of nothing, the Republicans, as of today, are still refusing to put climate on the table in an ancillary bill to what the president is asking for that they've agreed to. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's Republicans are still in that. They're not really climate deniers. I think they're funded so heavily from the fossil fuel industry that they are unwilling to grasp the reality. What I have a hard time reckoning is these are grandmothers and grandfathers and mothers and fathers in Congress. You know, what do they think their kids' lives are going to be like in, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Right.
But, they put reelection tops. I'm in Albany today, I'm sorry to say, to speak at a demonstration at Congressmember Paul Tonko's office at noontime today because he's introduced a bill that is really bad on climate change and includes federal tax dollars to subsidize garbage incinerators, like the Albany Answers plant that was shut down. What is Paul Tonko doing? So certainly the Democrats are better than the Republicans, but the Democrat response is not sufficient to deal with the crisis at hand.
So let me ask this question, staying on the national level for a second, and that is a headline in the New York Times that said, can Biden get a coal state Democrat on board with his climate agenda? This is about Joe Manchin, of course. So last week, as the president appeared outside the White House to announce that he'd reached a deal with centrist senators on an infrastructure package, oh, yeah, by the way, climate change was all the climate money was taken out of that.
Yes.
So how discouraging, but then how do you work around that and get what you need done and, yes, bring Joe Manchin along with you?
Well, I've been thinking about Joe Manchin a lot yesterday, since yesterday and the day before, because kind of the future of humanity is in his hands. And he would like you to think that, he would like you to think that he's looking out for the working class coal miner. Well, that New York Times article had a really important little tidbit that I was not aware of. Manchin made millions from his involvement in the coal brokerage firm Enner Systems.
Interesting.
Prior to coming into politics, he worked for a coal brokerage firm called Enner Systems, not even a word, which he helped run before entering politics, and which continues to pay him dividends thereafter. Because here's what I would do if I was in Washington with Joe Manchin. I would offer him something like a very large federal facility in West Virginia that will create hundreds, if not thousands, of jobs to replace the lost jobs in the coal industry. It's not that many jobs in West Virginia. And of course, every lost job is serious. But it's not like you're looking to replace a million jobs.
No.
And so, like, let's put a VA data center and do job training in West Virginia. Let's put federal facilities in West Virginia. He can replace those jobs, but I think we now know what's motivating Joe Manchin more than anything, and it's his personal desire for wealth because he's tied at the hip to a coal brokerage firm. So I don't know how Biden is going to get around that.
Yeah, but I think that West Virginia and the you know, Kentucky, the other coal states, are just completely in denial. They don't want to recognize reality. I remember back in 2016, Hillary Clinton was destroyed because she said honestly that the coal jobs are not coming back. And they're not.
Right.
And Donald Trump said, oh, we're going to revitalize the coal industry. And they loved it. And they elected him. And of course, that didn't happen. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to be retrained to do something else. I mean, I always thought there ought to be like a Marshall Plan for the coal country. You know, go in, retrain, you know, like you said, you know, some kind of federal spending on a facility that would generate jobs, but also train people, you know, and give them money for education. People don't want to change, and they don't want to. They shrug their shoulders. They're going to look at what's going on in the Pacific Northwest and say, you know, I did read that that kind of thing would ordinarily happen like once every thousands of years,
once
but it's likely to come back and be there
next summer
or next week, next summer.
Summer. It's only June.
Yeah. You just don't know. I want to be optimistic, but history and science would urge me to be more cautious.
So to paraphrase you.
Yeah. yes, would you please? Tell me what I'm saying because I don't know.
Well, no, I think what you're saying is quite right. The question is coal in West Virginia like God? In other words, it's a matter of faith, you know. Don't confuse me with the facts. Don't start telling me that we can.
It's a way of life. It's
a
culture, a way of life, and people are frightened about changing it. They want it to be the way it was. They want it to be like it always was in the past, even though many of them died from coal, lung disease, and all that. I mean, it's a terribly unsafe and unhealthy business. I mean, it could be replaced with all kinds of jobs that would be much greener and much healthier.
Rosemary,
do we really know that Manchin wants to undo the climate? Doesn't he just want to decouple it from infrastructure? Biden has made a mess in the minds of Republicans and many Americans about what infrastructure is. They always thought it was roads and bridges, which it definitely needs work. We're seeing that every day in New York State, and no one disagrees on it. So what's wrong with the idea of passing that and then dealing with the next step?
Because
I'm not convinced Manchin's not doing that.
Well, two things. I don't think this is too risky a strategy. I don't think they're going to get to step two. You saw what happened last week when Biden said, well, if you don't do part two, I'm not going to support part one. And then they spent the last 3 days walking that back. Manchin has been consistent. He is he really went after EPA during the Obama administration. He tries to gut clean air standards. He is completely in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry. And the one thing you can say about him is he's been consistently bad on this issue. So he, I believe, is not interested in serious job retraining.
But he's a Democrat, Judith.
Yeah, and he's the only Democrat in West Virginia.
And he's the 51st vote.
Yeah. I don't know what Biden is going to do.
Okay, so look at it. If Biden keeps them all together, he couples everything together, bundles it all together, I should say, Manchin's going to ditch it. So he's saying, if you want any of it, take it apart. That's not a bad political
Manchin's
solution.
Manchin's going to what? Rosemary, I didn't catch that. Manchin's going to what?
Manchin's going to ditch it. He's going to, he'll be a...
If he couples it. If
Biden bundles all of his infrastructure,
his initial
social programs,
absolutely.
And
yeah.
climate and traditional infrastructure. Right. Manchin is saying, if you want something, take it apart and I'll give you a vote. I would take that deal.
But
I would too.
I would not. But to Judith's point, how do you get to... Well, I mean... How do you get to part two? I mean, we've already seen, as you indicated, which I think made a good point. Okay, you look at what the last 3-4 days has been, just over the kerfuffle of walking back with the president.
I've been watching it.
No, I know that.
But here's
the thing.
I wasn't
saying you weren't.
No, I get it. But here's the thing. If you don't do it, if he goes, no, I'm sticking with my principles. We need it all. And we do. Then you don't get anything.
Just like
with gun control. We have nothing. Democrats have stood on, we really need a lot, and we do. We have nothing. So Biden is a centrist. I don't think he's going to do that. I hope he doesn't do that. I would like the roads and bridges fixed.
Okay, but how do we ever get, and how can we
you
then
gotta
get to
more
the
Democrats.
Second?
It's plain and
exactly
simple. You cannot
right.
do it with a razor-thin margin that Manchin or Sinema can blow up in a moment's notice. That's what you need, is voters behind you.
And by
they
the
don't
way,
have them.
And by the way, I don't know that McConnell is done yet. In other words, there's an agreement in principle here, but there's an awful lot of shakiness about the whole thing. And I don't know that McConnell won't throw a bomb at the last moment.
Yeah, and he's from Kentucky.
I mean, if you can't trust Mitch McConnell, who can you trust?
Yeah, we're in the soup here. We are in the soup here. I mean, I just don't know in this day and age how you do an infrastructure bill that doesn't address climate change. And if it's not Manchin, as Rosemary says, it's going to be Sinema. If it's mm-hmm. not Sinema, John Testa will go rogue. I mean,
exactly.
it's just unbelievable.
We have 30 seconds. We'll go ahead.
Well, but we need roads. We need bridges. We need mass transit systems. We need pipes that are not lead. I mean, we need
exactly.
all that.
Yep.
If we couple them, we'll probably get none of that.
Not right. necessarily. I think Biden has to fight harder. I think Schumer has to fight harder. This is the opening act on the infrastructure bill. There's lots of time.
I have 5 seconds. There's not lots of time. We only have 4 seconds. So I'm just going to remind you can write to us, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Well, nothing like a good climate conversation on a hot day to bring out a lot of letters. So we will bring them and... release them to our panel here,
and then we'll
see
fight
what
about
you,
it.
And then you'll all fight about it, and it'll be really good radio. So thank you. But we welcome your letter, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartak is here, Rosemary Armeo, Judith Henk, and Mike Spain. All right, here we go. Gregory says, you mentioned climate change and drought regarding the Pacific Northwest, United States, and Canada. You know that there is an issue, yet you omit companies like Nestle, which extracts significant amounts of water from the aquifers, exacerbating drought. You then immediately criticize Republicans for not including climate on aspects of Biden's agenda and claim they are beholden to fossil fuels, as if the Democrats are not. That is some fancy rhetoric to acknowledge the problem and omit capital influences, then focus on government, but only half of the broken two-party system. Take a breath.
Wow.
Thank you, Gregory.
I'm blaming everyone, Gregory. I mean, the Republicans are terrible in general. The Democrats need to do more. Nestle is indeed tapping into public water sources and then putting out millions of plastic bottles. You have to stay focused. Who's your target that you can influence? And it's certainly, I think, we're going to have a better shot convincing Democrats than Republicans to do the right thing.
Here's a peppy little letter from Bob, who says all of our political problems will pale in comparison to the changes coming. The coastal areas will receive high storm surges. Where it's drying up will get worse. Where it's rainy will get worse. More hurricanes with greater intensities. Hang on to your hats, folks, while the band plays on. Then we go to this letter from Barbara, should we get a new hybrid to replace our 160,000-mile Prius, or is it better for the environment to get an all-electric vehicle? Oh, so climate discussion and shopping tips.
Hmm. Yeah, it's better to get an all-electric vehicle, especially if the energy source is clean.
Right, right.
You know,
you don't want it to be a coal-fired plant that provides the electricity.
Thank you, Heloise.
We are. I know. We really we do have to do a green Heloise show. I mean, I love the shows when I'm like just screaming and having a emotional breakdown over climate change or plastic in the ocean, and someone writes in and says, "Is it number one and two plastic, or is it number three or four plastic?" And I appreciate that, and we all have a role to play. Electric, and if you can, mass transit and carpool and bike.
Michael says global warming is a natural cyclical occurrence. Yep, humans are just making it worse. Then we go to Bill. Yesterday's record temp in Portland, Oregon, was something like 118, broke the record that was set the day before.
You know what's amazing about that? That ties the record for the hottest day ever in Las Vegas, which is in the middle of the desert. And right. Portland is a very temperate area, very mild and lovely and rainy.
Sailboats.
Scary.
John says, I left academia after getting my PhD, which was in climate physics. I also always describe climate as follows. Weather, what's happening outside right now. Seasons, the average weather over months. Climate, the average seasons over centuries. Feel free to write this down and reuse it everywhere. P.S. I always ask, are the seasons anything like what they were 20 years ago or when you were a kid? No, that's climate change. Normally takes centuries or millennia to change, not years.
Yes, write that down. Absolutely correct.
Okay, thank you, John. Chas says, the water evaporates from this lake. This is Lake Mead. Becoming useless. Let's breach the dam and let the Colorado River flow freely. All right, free the river. Let's see. We go to...
I'm so depressed. I want to go home and jump in my pool and await Armageddon.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah.
Every day.
It's really...
Reading climate reports.
You get at 10:50. You can do all that. Okay. All right. Let's go over to this letter. This has to do with the Republican climate. The richest people on Earth will be the least affected by climate change. Right now is their last-ditch effort, chance to squeeze the most cash they can from fossil fuel providers so they and their rich descendants can live in their gilded air-conditioned towers while everyone else suffers for generations because of their greed.
Fair.
John, another John writes, what do Republican Congress and grandparents and parents think about global warming? They think their money and privilege will insulate them from negative impacts. They're wrong, of course. And if the poor and minorities suffer the consequences... Well, it's obviously the result of their lack of effort and moral failures. Sarcasm alert, Alan. Okay, we go to Leslie. I have the solution to get the deniers in the Republican Party to get off their behinds. Shut off and lock down their air conditioners. They need to experience what this out-of-control train is speeding toward. Then
let's have the United States Senate vote to turn off the rich people's.
Or how about turn off the air conditioning in Congress for a day?
Yeah, that'll do it.
And because, I mean, they need to experience what millions of Americans are experiencing
they
today
to,
who don't have air conditioning. Come on, Chuck Schumer, turn off the air conditioning in the Senate and let's talk about climate change.
When you look at the median age of
one
most
day.
U.S.
That's
senators, funny. You'd probably lose a few, I think, if that happened.
Okay, is that so bad? She muttered under her breath.
David says, it seems to me that science deniers are actually fact and analysis deniers. They will embrace science data when it appears to support a position of minimal change caused by human activity, yet they're not willing to take a step back and see the bigger picture. Juan says, there's a lot of...
Well, there's a terrible point here. Maybe they do see the bigger picture. I mean, I'm not willing to say that they don't see it. I think that they are, you know, they are prostitutional politically, and they don't care. They see it. They know it, don't they? Of course they do. Judith, don't they?
Well, it's hard not to see it. I mean, it's hot. It's West is on fire a good chunk of the summer. Sea level rise, more intense hurricanes. They see it, and they choose to ignore it. And, you know, I put members of Congress in a different category. They are elected officials. They have an obligation to to understand the science. They have access to any information they want. They can be briefed by climate scientists. And they are choosing to side with their donors from fossil fuel companies.
Absolutely right.
I think that's mostly what this is about for Congress.
Or with a president, ex-president, who says, if you say anything to support this nonsense, I'll put my finger on you and you'll be gone.
On that subject about both sides here, there's a lot of bashing of Republicans and talk of Manchin as a blocker, but we have had a long time to start addressing climate change, and a large number of Democrats have done very little. The country as a whole needs to be hit over the head in order to realize the seriousness of the climate issue.
What constitutes being hit over the head if what Judith just described is going on? Hurricanes are more fierce, the West is drying out and burning up, and then we're getting things like what's going on in Oregon and Washington.
But for 4 years, we had a president who, when the temperature in Washington got to be like 20, he would say, and people were talking about global warming and climate change. I mean, that doesn't help.
Well, we lost 4 very valuable years. I mean, not only did nothing happen that needed to happen, but bad things happened. We went backwards for 4 years. And the question is, will we recover from that? There's no question that Joe Biden is, you know, really moving in the right direction. I mean, some of his climate policies are incredibly impressive and important. And we now have, you know, better relations on the world stage to deal with other world leaders. But Joe Manchin, like, holding the entire country hostage because of his personal financial investments, I think that's what's going on.
Yeah, but if he's defeated, we keep coming back to this.
Well, I think Rosemary's point is it has to be more than a slim margin. People need to get very politically active and get more Democrats elected in states where that is doable, not West Virginia.
But the political scientists in the room will tell you what happens virtually every off-year election.
Yes, it goes south if you happen to be a Democrat.
So, well, if you're in power, you're in the White House.
Yeah, if you're in the White House, yes.
Although we did see Georgia, thanks to Stacey Abrams, we got two Democrats.
Georgia is such an outlier. I hate that we keep using this as a beacon of hope. It was an extraordinary circumstance in which you had Stacey Abrams, who I would opt for sainthood, and you had Trump really messing up badly. And still, those two men who got in did it by a very narrow vote.
And one is up in 2020.
Exactly. And now may lose. We have 33 state houses that are in the hands of Republicans, which means they have control over redistricting, mm-hmm. which means not only will it be harder in 2022,
which is
not a Democratic year, but in every year after, it's going to be harder to get Democrats in. And as I said, that's the only thing that's really going to save it is a margin of more than one vote.
But there is, of course, for those of us who are really quite desperate about all this, a glimmer of mobilization, you know, the potential for mobilization over this issue. You know, getting people, you change the polling places and somebody's going to say, okay, we'll get buses. You know, if you want to, you can. And I think there's a possibility that that may happen.
And I think that's why you see all these voter suppression efforts. Sure. They don't want people voting in large numbers who will vote out Republicans.
Absolutely.
One more letter and then we'll take a break. Eddie says, according to my internet search, the average hourly wages for coal miners is $24 an hour. This is to your point earlier, Judith, about other sources of jobs in West Virginia. If you're going to offer training for new jobs, you'll have to offer good-paying jobs, not the national $7.25 an hour minimum wage.
Absolutely.
I think you all get
Absolutely.
The point
yeah,
of what we certainly
course.
Do.
Yeah. And there is an initiative. I never thought it was productive to, say, retrain coal miners to install solar panels. Those are different skill sets. But there is a major, well-funded initiative to plug old oil and gas wells that are venting methane into the atmosphere. That's the same skill set at the same pay wage and desperately needed. And I think coal miners would be very willing to do that. It's actually probably safer than going down into the mine. And then for younger people, you know, let's have the VA back office computer operation in West Virginia. Let's put, you know, new federal facilities there to make up the difference. I still don't think Joe Manchin would come around because I think it's about his personal greed. But at least you'd have a you'd take care of people who are losing jobs in the coal industry.
There was an article, it was sent out this morning. It was in the morning news from the New York Times, and they're talking about the New York City election. You know, which mm-hmm. we still don't know about definitively
not
yet.
Not decided.
We think Eric still Adams waiting. Won, but we don't know.
We're still waiting.
I think Catherine Garcia and Maya Wiley have a shot.
They do. It happened in Oakland, California, where two and three were ended up winning. I think three ended up winning.
Yeah, if you look at where the absentee ballots are coming in from and not yet counted, it's from districts where Garcia and Wiley did quite well on election day.
He does have a big lead, though. That's,
he does. He's got
36,000.
But if you count the number two votes, you know, if people didn't pick, you know, it's very complicated.
So
it's doable.
It's very complicated.
Sorry.
David, that's okay. David Leonhardt in the Times writes, the bottom line, and this gets to what we were just talking about, to win elections and hold national power, the Democratic Party does not merely need to win a majority of the vote because of gerrymandering, the Electoral College, and the structure of the Senate. Democrats have to win a few points more than 50%. That's not easy, and it requires appealing to working class voters across racial groups. The good news for the party is that public opinion data shows a clear majority of Americans lean left on economic issues and are much more moderate on social issues than many Republicans. The bad news for the Democratic Party is that this national majority is not as liberal as many high-profile Democratic activists and politicians think. It isn't clear whether those activists and politicians are willing to moderate their positions to win more elections.
I don't think it's about moderating positions. I think it's about getting in the arena and running. Look at how low the turnout was in these local races.
Unbelievable. Couple weeks ago.
And in so many cities, you win the Democratic primary, you typically win the election. So, you've got Adams in New York City, but you also have...
Tell me said hi. Go ahead.
You also have India Walton in Buffalo, who won the Democratic Party primary for mayor. Of course, Mayor Byron Brown is saying he may do a write-in campaign now. Yeah. But, you know, I think only 15% of the eligible people voted in Buffalo. So I think it's about becoming very politically active at the local level, at the state level. And we need a pipeline of good candidates who are committed to addressing the climate crisis at the local level and then running for higher office.
So I keep wanting to take a break, but then I keep interrupting myself. So, I'll take a break, and then I want to ask the what I think is the Rosemary question. We'll be right back.
Oh, boy.
All right. Well, when last we left, I had a question that I was going to ask that I thought would be something that both Rosemary would want to go in on. But I forgot about it because we were talking about electricians, so I don't remember what it was. So
Rosemary question. Now it's
mystery. What is the Rosemary question?
Aww. We'll try to think. Let me bang my head.
This may be part of the question is, I mean, if Joe Biden is able to succeed, and the Democrats who barely control Congress are able to succeed before the 2022 elections, their chances of bringing more on are much greater. That's why Mitch McConnell has to make them fail. And that's what's going on here. If he can do anything to scuttle all this, even infrastructure, which we desperately need, he'll do it because he doesn't want Biden to get any credit for anything.
Right.
Not only he, the man who he's reporting to, doesn't want that to happen.
The Donald.
That's right.
The Donald.
Although, didn't Bill Barr's interview with Atlantic make you reconsider whether McConnell's really working with Trump?
Why don't you repeat for everybody that was about?
We talked about this yesterday, this was Jonathan Carl's article in The Atlantic, which was, I believe, an interview that was done earlier this year, I think in April, and it was released.
It's funny.
It was odd. And then, which brought up my question is, so why didn't he report that for ABC and wait for Atlantic? I guess they were the ones with the check. But whoever... Whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was curious. So the issue is he was talking to Bill Barr. Bill Barr basically said, look, when Trump was going through the big lie stuff in November and December, I went to the Associated Press and said, well, I don't see any how this possibly could be a thing, because it seems to us like everything was done according. Yes, exactly.
And he said, Mitch is the one who urged him to do this.
He said, Mitch called up and said, you have to do something. You're the only one who can have the voice. And he said, because, he tells Jonathan Carl, because we all knew it was BS.
Mm-hmm. And this at the bold. Time, McConnell yeah. was saying nothing, so he certainly appeared to be in lockstep with...
That's because trip. McConnell is a very, 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 very bad man.
Yes, he is. I agree with you on that.
Bad man or good but good politician? Or
well,
no?
I mean, good if good means effective, but effective...
Like good in the Darth Vader way?
Yes. Right, yes. Perfectly exactly. put, yeah.
I know you look this up every time I say it, but I know that that McConnell's... numbers, U.S. numbers, and in Kentucky are not that good. They're not.
Oh,
but he was just reelected 2 years ago.
They're much better in Kentucky. They're loathsome in the rest of the country, but pretty much everybody is.
He doesn't
yeah.
care.
Only matters is Kentucky.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Too bad.
He has learned that popularity is not what he wants.
Change the Constitution.
Yeah, it's the way our founders set it up. Little states have as much influence as big states mm-hmm. in the Senate.
Right. Yeah, but
I go back. I don't think that it's Trump who's directing the anti-climate movement we're stuck in the last century. I think that's a Republican-wide policy. It comes from their donors. Mm-hmm. It comes from their power base. Yeah,
yeah.
Their constituencies.
Yeah.
And yet, Rosemary, you don't see Trump or any of the other guys at the top who lead the way doing anything to help things.
No, I think he's part of it. He's caught up in it the same way that, you know, they all are. They all are beholden to fossil fuels. They are beholden to big business, which is dependent on fossil fuel. You know,
you had it right.
Get
fossil fuel.
Fossil fuel.
Fossil
yeah.
fuel money. Yeah, and it's just getting worse. I mean, we're working so hard to get renewables and electric vehicles, and now the fossil fuel industry is investing in plastic production. One of the facilities that Paul Tonko recently visited in West Virginia, paid for by the fossil fuel industry, a private trip. I mean, so I go back to the guy who scolded us earlier in the show. Yeah, there are problems on the Democratic side, too. And it's shocking that someone like Paul Tonko, who's been so outspoken on climate change and environmental issues, is not, you know, he didn't really announce this fossil fuel funded trip to West Virginia to his constituents. What's that about?
Well, I know, and like Paul Tonko,
I like him, too.
I know that. And I do think this rises to the level of a news story, and I'm sure our news department will ask the question, because there may be more to this than we know.
So let's talk about Donald Trump for a moment. His attorney is meeting with New York prosecutors to argue that his company should not be criminally charged over its business practices.
I don't get this whole thing.
I love that. Look, guys, we shouldn't be charged, okay?
Right.
Just
I don't get it.
I know you may want to, but really, come on. Don't you have anything better to do?
So you murdered somebody. We think we have to arrest you because we know you murdered somebody. But will you come in and explain to us why you shouldn't be arrested? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
The prosecutors working for the Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. and New York Attorney General Letitia James had set Monday as the last day for the organization's lawyers to make their case. After Monday's session, spokespeople for both Vance and James declined to comment. No charges were announced on Monday. Vance has convened a grand jury in Manhattan to vote on potential indictments in the investigation, but so far, no person or entity connected to Trump has been charged. It remains possible that none will be. Those familiar with the investigation spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the private meetings. Trump issued a lengthy written statement Monday denouncing the prosecutors. Yes, he used the words witch hunt, just saying that they were seeking to punish him because of his politics. Trump did not specify what practices prosecutors were focused on, but said there were, quote, things that are standard practice throughout the U.S. business community and in no way
a
crime.
He's probably right about that.
He probably is right about a little of that, yes. All right.
But one of the problems here is that in these tax cases, I mean, the general accusation seems to be that they inflated the value of things when it was convenient, and they deflated the value of things when it was convenient when it comes to paying taxes and all that kind of thing. So that goes on a lot. He's right. It's not legal, but it does go on. often these cases are settled by them agreeing to pay the taxes they didn't pay. So basically, it's like a free ride. And this is traditionally how a lot of those are settled. I don't, you know, people, if they think the Manhattan DA is going to march in and take Donald Trump away in handcuffs, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Maybe Alan Weisenberg, his CFO, will get indicted on something because he was like in charge. But, you know, this is really sounds like a it's going to be a disappointment to a lot of people.
I am disappointed. I have been. As soon as I heard that they were considering criminal charges against a company, which, as you know, you can't throw
right.
a company
An
into jail. Yeah. And I believe the whole meeting, tell us why we shouldn't charge, is a settlement meeting, basically. Here's what it would cost to make this go away. And that's happened before to Trump. It is not true accountability in the sense that we want it. And I think this is like the Mueller report. We kept thinking, oh, he's finally going to be held. His feet to the fire.
No.
In our country, we do not send the rich and powerful to jail or punish them very often.
So just say that again, because I think that was my takeaway, but how unusual is it to have this meeting? I mean, that just to sit down.
I don't think it's unusual.
I don't think it's unusual at all. I mean, if you recall when Hillary Clinton was being questioned by the FBI about her emails, remember the emails? The Republicans went crazy because the FBI did essentially the same thing, called her in and said, "This is what we have on you. What do you think?" And you give them a chance. It's the lawyers are looking at discovery and looking at the evidence. It's a
see
prelude.
If they have a case.
Yeah. It's a prelude, if not an actual opening for settlement.
I know this because I watch Law and Order almost every night.
Right, that's right. Well, I think if you are the target of an FBI probe, they inform you. They do inform you. I mean, and they tell you you're the target. I remember when Joe Bruno was first investigated, they told him he was the target of an FBI investigation.
And they bring the target in last. They do all of their legwork.
But
and
I mean,
they bring them in and say, is there any logical explanation?
Yeah, I mean, am I missing
this?
Something here?
Well, exactly my question. Am I missing something here? But sorry to be dense, but at this point, it could be that they're looking for more information for charges, but also to get ready for, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean a settlement.
All of the stories say that this is one step, and it does not preclude, of all, there'll be charges against the company, but even if there are, it doesn't preclude also moving against the Trumps. But, you know, it's like Joe Biden saying, yeah, give me this bill and I'll pass it and then I'll give you another one.
But what does the deadline mean?
The deadline of yesterday afternoon.
Yes.
Well,
they
want to. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, they established that deadline. I mean, essentially, if you're going to indict a company in such a high-profile case as this, you want to make sure. Are we missing anything? Because this is exactly as we see it. This is your opportunity to tell us and give us, you know, some information that explains it differently. But right now, this is where we're at, and they expect to be, you know, facing charges. It's already been reported. So, I mean, it's if you're a prosecutor, you don't, and somebody has a exculpatory brief that would make you look foolish, you want to hear about it before you go out on a limb and charge them publicly. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's what this is. It's to help a prosecutor save face.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a wonderful panel, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judith Henk, and Mike Spain. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have we've been covering a lot of stuff, so we got a lot of letters. I'm just going to real quick go through. I left all but five. We have many more letters, but these are the ones that we have time to read. What?
But just one minor announcement that comes out of yesterday's discussion about men's and women's rooms. You may remember that whole thing. And whether they should be neutralized.
Sorry, I'm popping the Schlitz. So, go ahead.
So, I have a feeling, Joe, that was a political statement.
It is, yeah.
Anyway, we have neutralized the bathrooms now.
We don't have bathrooms anymore? You've neutralized them?
We have bathrooms, all right. But it doesn't say men's and women's anymore. I just want to make that public announcement.
Excellent.
All right. Well, knowing that, I'll continue drinking my water. Okay.
I get it.
We have this letter from Loretta. Maybe bankrupting Trump is not a bad strategy to make him irrelevant. Julia says the money is still with fossil fuels and politicians follow the money to stay in power, overturn Citizens United. That actually was the question I was going to ask.
How do you that do
was
that?
That was the Rosemary question about, like, how do we do any of this without overturning Citizens United?
Yeah. Doesn't it need a constitutional amendment to overturn
it? No, it needs any law by the Congress would supersede it. Congress has the right to make a law that would a real campaign finance law. The Supreme Court interpreted law as it existed and said, nope, unconstitutional companies are like people. But Congress could overdo that, except it won't because of the Congress we have.
Right.
Mitch McConnell saying, oh, no, companies have less rights.
A lot of Democrats now like to get the money, too, and they see that drying up if they have to.
And Trump will never be bankrupted. Don't forget, he's an ex-president now. He gets a pension that's more money than most Americans make in a year.
So, say nothing of the Secret Service.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
To say nothing of the Secret Service and what that's costing the American.
Yeah, and free travel and all kinds of stuff. So he is, face it, he is not going to be held accountable.
No, but
he got away with it, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Ron, being hit over the head will occur when places like, this is about the heat. When places like Phoenix, Arizona are no longer habitable, thank you very much, because on a cool day it's 120 degrees and, oh, there's no more water. Unfortunately, that will occur too late for our kids, our grandchildren, and maybe us. Mm-hmm. Okay. I remember we were staying in Phoenix and there was a pool on the top of the hotel. Mm-hmm. And we went up and it was really hot. And we went up and we went to the elevator and the elevator doors opened. They said, pool closed. And I said to the attendant, I said, will the pool reopen? And she says, well, when it stops boiling.
Oh, my God.
Like the water was so scalding hot.
Wow.
Like, that's, good that's Lord.
With the water.
Our rooftop hot tub.
Right. Doreen says, regarding Joe Manchin and his financial gains from the coal industry, what about the fact that Manchin opposed the $15 an hour minimum wage and shortly thereafter his wife was confirmed to $163,000 position as co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission? When Manchin's daughter was CEO of Mylan,
She hugely increased
the price of the EpiPen. And made $19 million in 1 year. It was like a best of. You're all chiming in with it.
Yeah, it's like all this stuff is reported.
I didn't know Joe Manchin was linked to the EpiPen.
I got
to
find my EpiPen.
His daughter. Yeah, and then he went against nominees who called her out on that. I can't remember the particular person that he was blocking. The whole family, grifters.
Okay, but what happens?
And we vote them in.
What happens in 2022 when Joe Manchin loses to a conservative Republican from West Virginia?
A Trump Republican.
Are we going to see much of a difference?
Oh.
Yeah, you'll see a difference.
Yeah, because Chuck Schumer loses his Senate majority ship.
That's correct.
All right. Let's see. Let's go to we talked about the Trump case, so let's now talk about a lot of court action in the news today. So we'll talk about the Juul vaping settlement. Juul to pay $40 million to settle North Carolina vaping case. The settlement is the first in a stream of lawsuits against the company, which has been accused of deceptive marketing practices that contributed to a wave of nicotine addiction in teenagers. I have to admit that we had an author on who was talking about this Juul story and about vaping. And the thing that just floored me, and maybe you all don't feel this way, but Juul came out in 2015. That's not very long ago.
Right,
I thought it'd been around a lot longer than
right,
that.
No.
This all happened in the past 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
And it's really incredible.
And during the Trump administration. So Trump administration wasn't going to do anything to control them.
Because of Big Tobacco. Mm-hmm. So Juul Labs has agreed to pay North Carolina $40 million to settle the first of a spate of lawsuits brought by states and localities claiming the e-cigarette company's marketing practices fueled widespread addiction to nicotine among young people and created a new public health problem. The settlement, which was announced on Monday, allows the company to avoid a jury trial this summer as the Food and Drug Administration is deciding whether its vaping products can stay on the market. The company had urgently sought the settlement, but the deal removes just one of numerous legal actions pending against it. 13 other states, including California, Massachusetts, and New York, as well as D.C., have filed similar lawsuits. The central claim in each case is that Juul knew or should have known that it was hooking teenagers on pods that contained high levels of nicotine. So quite a bit there to unpack, but let me start with the settlement for North Carolina. Help me, but $40 million doesn't seem like all that much money.
Nope.
It's not.
Nope. And it, but what, 22 other states are going after them? And,
yes.
And they're just trying to...
And that won't be that much money either.
No, they're trying to negotiate their way out of it. They've made tons of money. They made it fast and quickly, and I believe they were purchased by one of the big tobacco companies as they were starting all this out. So it was clear that they were advertising, making it cool and showing hipsters smoking, you know, the Juul. And, you know, they were aiming it at the youth market, and they denied it. They said it was for health reasons, for heavy smokers to cut back on their carcinogens. They
and,
made it,
and
that was
then
wrong.
For really young kids, I mean, they were making them flavored and cotton candy and berry and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that didn't help. That has been eradicated to some extent.
Right. I think they still do menthol. I think the Trump administration let them do menthol, which is a really terrible thing because it deadens the nerves in your lungs and lets you take in more smoke and nicotine and cause even more damage. And that why they were allowed to continue to make menthol devices is beyond me.
Well, rest assured, Joe Manchin will be standing up for them in Congress and be consistent here. But $40 million is not much. They're probably aiming for something like the Master Tobacco Settlement, but this is considering the damage done. I mean, these stories of young people who got hooked on vaping, very compelling. And of course, there's a plastic element to this because they get littered. These are plastic devices, and they have these little chips in them.
Yeah.
It's not called a chip. It's called something else.
But it's why it's an e-cigarette. It's a little electric thing that boils the stuff, right?
Right. So a major source of litter. You litter that on the street. It goes into the storm sewer. It gets into the rivers and the ocean. And they should just put Juul out of business, she said, quite naively.
Yeah, and right after they send Trump up, they'll put a company out of business. This is like the Johnson & Johnson settlement on opioids, which was a pittance compared to the damage they did and compared to the money they made doing that damage.
So you have...
They didn't even have to admit they did anything wrong. Isn't that true? That's part of the settlement.
Yeah, that always is.
Ordinarily.
No mea culpa.
So where do you go from here? Because as you said, you mean the Juul's still on the market. Juul's still being sold. And I assume that will continue.
Yes.
Watch your kids like hawks. Search their rooms. Make them stop. It's up to you.
That was one of their tricks. They would put the devices
into the Capital District.
They would make them look like USB thumb drives and other things
that were not detectable, people
wouldn't even know were actual pods used to vape with and obviously aimed at kids who want to keep it secret.
Because it was more like a steam than a smoke. So
a big plume that comes out.
It's a lot.
It's
I mean, I've had students who they just kind of like take a little nip and then suddenly there's a cloud around
them.
It's like, oh, that wasn't obvious. It's an unusual product, but lots of kids are hooked on it.
All right. So let us go to another topic here. I want to quickly talk about, I quickly want to go to this letter from Paul, rather. Rosemary is right. Corporate personhood is almost entirely a judicial invention and could be adjusted by law since corporations are entities created by law. This in an email that is titled Citizens United. The fact that such legislation is never even discussed shows how corrupted our ruling and media classes are. Oh, what about
ruling and media? What do we have to do with it, sir?
Well, I think his point would be that media has sold out and along with everybody else.
That's an opinion that is disputed by many.
Yeah, but not by him.
No.
But right again.
But we welcome your letters. All right. Well, that was fun. Let's see. I want to go to this story, which is the other media story, which is about legal, which is about Facebook. Oh, Judge throws out two antitrust cases against Facebook. The decisions were a major blow to attempts to rein in big tech. The judge said one of the complaints from the Federal Trade Commission lacked facts and gave the agency 30 days to refile it. So how? Okay.
How could it lack facts?
Exactly. How does the Federal Trade Commission
Trump holdovers
file a lawsuit and
There's an Obama guy.
Oh, my God. I forgot the facts. We didn't put the facts in the... All right.
Lousy lawsuits seem to be in the news a lot lately, mostly with Trump trying to fight the election. But this is also his stuff on immigration. This is another one. The case did not make, in the brief, which is required, did not make a case that Facebook is a monopoly. It wanted the judge to just say, oh, yeah, everybody knows it's a monopoly. You cannot do that. It's shoddy work product. And they have 30 days to fix it up. They've assigned it to a new young woman who's been assigned. I forgot her name. She's supposed to whip it into shape.
But he gave
a blueprint for what he needed.
She'll fix it.
Oh, I see.
The government does not have anything near their legal resources at hand that Facebook has. Mm. They'll hire the biggest, Madison Avenue law firms or the biggest California law firms, and they'll go up against a team that probably would fit in this little room that we're in.
They didn't get that far. They didn't get past the judge.
To bring the original suit. And
the government brings all the minds of people who are activists and truly hate antitrust, the Zephyr Teachouts of the world, the people who hate Facebook and what it has done. It has plenty of talent. This was just shoddy work.
The judge eviscerated one of the federal government's core arguments that Facebook holds a monopoly over social networking, saying prosecutors had failed to provide enough facts to back up this claim, and that he said the states had waited too long to bring their case, which centers on deals made in 2012 and 2014. So, yeah, why did it take so long?
Yeah.
Well, if that's true, then why is nobody looking at MySpace page that I run? Wasn't that the alternative to MySpace?
Yes, yeah, MySpace and there was the other one. Yeah.
So Mike makes an interesting point, which is going to get me into trouble. You have all of these Americans who are using Facebook and who love it. I mean, absolutely love it and live by it. So it's very hard when you're the Attorney General of New York State or other people to bring this case and to have popular support for it. I know a lot of our listeners don't like monopoly, and I don't like it either. Nevertheless, there is this issue of why are you picking on my Facebook?
Yeah, I mean, what would a broken up Facebook even look like? Would it be two or three different Facebooks, like Facebook Blue?
Competition.
No, but you'd have Instagram pulled off of it. Yeah, it's bought a whole bunch of new apps that have nothing to do.
Right?
Yeah, WhatsApp and Instagram.
You
bump those off. That would be a start.
Okay.
There are ways to do this. And popularity has nothing to do with antitrust. AT&T was pretty popular, too.
But the law is in some ways tied to popular support for lawsuits. You can say it's amorphous, that it's not really, it really doesn't count, but it's there. I think I know an awful lot of people who, if you took away a couple of the things that they bought, would live with it. But if you busted up like Ma Bell and said, okay, and we know what happened with that, they're back in force. So the larger issue is, are we going to start to take monopoly seriously in this country, period?
Mm-hmm. That is the question. And when you look at social media, it is very monopolistic. And should it be regulated like a utility?
Oh, right? That's a whole different discussion, but mm-hmm. I think you're getting on to something. The trouble with Facebook is, you know, all the good that it does in connecting people, and people love it, and blah, 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 see these pictures, I went on vacation, and all that. It takes you, the user of Facebook, are actually what it serves up to its advertisers. And a lot of people don't realize it, but they're just the chattel that goes on between the advertisers and Facebook, and that's why they have billions of dollars.
Nor do they care.
But here's the thing. Some don't care. It costs nothing, which is a big component in this suit. In any other monopoly case, you make the issue that citizens have to pay more because of your monopolistic practices. You pay nothing for Facebook, and there's nothing in the law that addresses
it. You don't pay in dollars out of your pocket.
You don't pay in anything.
You become exploited. Mm-hmm. Look what happened in the 2016 election. I know, it's very hard to make that argument.
Yeah.
Jeez, right. I'm with Rosemary.
So I mean, the thing is, though, that what's so insidious about it to me is that it's now tied into everything else. So, for example, if I decide, here is the perfect example. I decide that I wanted to give money to my church. Okay, so I go on and I log on. They said you have to have an account. And then you say, okay, and they said, would you like to start an account? And I said, yes. And then, okay, just take a moment. I'm starting an account with the church. Okay, so then, then.
You want to log in with Facebook, Joe?
Exactly, exactly. Everyone is now, that's the go-to, right? Google or Facebook. Mm. Log in this way. You don't have to go through all this other crap that's going to take you 24 minutes. All you have to do is log into your Facebook account. We'll know everything about you, and then we suck you in.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's monopolistic practice.
Exactly.
Now, did they use that nice little Joe give to my church anecdote in their lawsuit?
Yeah, well, no, by the way, I would like to just point out that I was giving to my church for a really liberal cause. But that's another point.
How much did you give?
Just log into Facebook.
Facebook knows.
We can find out.
But Facebook knows, Joe.
And your time is money. Now you're getting targeted with all sorts of related things
that
you have to go
Every
through.
Every other liberal
so
cause
it's not really
out.
Free. When they say it's free, it's
right.
not.
But that's the problem. It's more complicated. Anything that's nuanced and complicated to explain dies.
How about my time is money?
You know, I mean, to Rosemary and Alan's point, you know, we keep on saying, I know during the election and even certainly after the Trump election in 2016, people were saying, well, because of these practices, we're going to stop using Facebook and we're getting away with Facebook and we're going to stop using Facebook and blah, blah, blah. And every day, 2 billion people use Facebook.
I should admit, I am a huge addict.
Full disclosure.
But I don't want to get off Facebook. However, I do not think that it should be run the way it is. I would like it better regulated. Not by Republicans, please. Josh Hawley should have nothing to do with social media. And I do think that
Or anything else.
I do think this lawsuit is pointing out some big problems in the antitrust laws, which were built to look at turn of the last century's companies, giant industrial complexes, not media organizations such as they now exist. So if something good comes out of it, it might be that, updating those laws.
So what do you think the next 30 days is going to bring?
There'll be a round-the-clock effort to try to make a better presentation and fill in the gaps that the judge identified.
He gave a pretty good
roadmap
of what they... Was it a woman? I'm saying he. That's what I hesitated on.
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I mean, there are a lot of facts there in terms of Facebook's market dominance.
You should be able to opt out of a lot of things so that you don't, they cannot share your information. And they've even, Apple was building that into their software so you could opt out of, Facebook couldn't follow where all your other places are and sell that to advertisers. And they were threatening to sue Apple. Now, Apple, another big one that has enormous control over everything, too.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's like the titans are all in battle.
And that's why it's really not just one company. It is like updating monopolistic laws for all of social media.
That's exactly
old people are on Facebook, young people are on TikTok, Apple, Siri, Twitter. I mean, you're not going to have separate rules for the separate companies, but the law is in another century.
The judge was James Boasberg of U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia.
You know, back in the 30s, NBC was so big that the federal government made it break up, and they had NBC Red and NBC
Blue,
and NBC Red became ABC.
Yeah, but in those days, they were taking us a little bit more seriously.
Yeah. So they have intervened in media companies. Not lately.
Okay, so we have letters.
From Facebook users?
No.
Can they send a letter by Facebook?
Kathleen says, Rosemary, not Johnson & Johnson. Purdue Pharma is owned by the Sackler family.
Johnson & Johnson, though, who made the big settlement,
Johnson & Johnson, this past week, after the Sacklers got into
trouble, Johnson & Johnson tried to stave off suits and bankruptcy and made a settlement that was extremely puny.
Clarification.
I think the Sackler family and the Manchin family should summer together.
They may already.
and bring Paul Tonka along.
Yes, but where would they summer where it is not too hot?
Didn't Louis L'Amour write about the Sackler family?
Sackett.
Sackett. Right,
Sackett.
You are.
Yes.
You read those too, Joe?
I did. Alexa writes, don't laugh about people using vaping over smoking. It's an amazing achievement for them, helping them breathe better. Have none of you ever smoked?
This is a fact that for people who are heavy, like 2-pack-a-day smokers, you know, when they went to vaping, it was healthier, quote-unquote healthier. It was less terrible for their health. It was still very bad for their health. And doctors, you know, would say that would be better and if it was a path to, you know, lowering the amount of nicotine. The trouble is, while they were pretending that was their purpose, they were marketing like crazy to teenagers, getting them hooked on nicotine, where a right. lot of experts think they're going to end up smoking
well,
regular cigarettes.
Right. Well put.
Also, Elias says, Dems who say Manchin isn't any better than a Republican are clueless. He's pro-union, pro-minimum wage, pro-Obamacare, pro-infrastructure, and I could go on for pages. Not to mention he gives Democrats a majority, which means they set the agenda and appoint judges and hamstring McConnell.
As usual, Elias is right and makes some very valid points, I think, because you don't want to lose control of the Senate.
So Paul says, and if we were incorrect in this, this is my fault. But Paul says that Manchin's term ends in 2025. He's not up for re-election in 2022. So where I got messed up in this is he was elected in 2010, so that would have brought him to 2016, which mm-hmm. would have brought him to 2022.
Right.
But was he filling a vacant term?
Oh, well, it was 2010. Yeah, that I don't know.
Possible.
Okay. All right. I will go back for revision. Okay. And
that's good. If he isn't up for re-election, he would give him more time to act now and win.
Pay later.
And win back his.
It's hard to believe that every story written about him wouldn't say he was up for re-election.
Yeah.
No, that's very true.
That's true.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have our last go around with our wonderful panel here, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. First, we will have some news from the BBC, and then we'll be back. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. I wasn't hearing anything in my headphones, and I thought I went deaf, but no, it was just an issue there. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We have our last call here with everyone. We have about 10 minutes or so, so let's make the most of our 11 minutes and 14 seconds together. I want to talk about the NCAA for a moment. This is this comes after the Supreme Court decision that was announced about a week and a half ago, I believe. So the NCAA Division I Council is recommending allowing athletes to profit off name, image, and likeness. So if you are a young athlete and you are being exploited by the NCAA, you now are able to actually get paid for
that. Join in the fun.
That's right. The 24-member NCAA Division I Board of Directors will review and is expected to approve that historic recommendation Wednesday, the eve of the July 1st date that athletes' rights advocates had been pointing toward with anticipation for months. On that day, 8 of the 21 states have passed laws enabling athletes in the NIL option will see those laws go into effect. The 8 are Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, New Mexico, Ohio, and Texas. A 9th state, Arizona, has passed a law and is going into effect July 23rd. 12 more states have laws going into effect in 2022, 2023, and 2025, but some might move to bring those laws closer to the present. Faced with the prospect of athletes playing under different sets of rules depending on the state in which they attend college, the council, composed largely of university athletic directors, sought to even the playing field by suspending the policy that prohibited athletes from benefiting financially in such a way. It said athletes could employ, quote, a professional services provider for NIL activities and should report all such endeavors, quote, consistent with state law or school and conference requirements to their school. The NCAA in a statement said, while opening NIL activities to student athletes, the policy leaves in place the commitment to avoid pay-for-play and improper inducements tied to choosing to attend a particular school. So come to us and we'll give you a Lamborghini. Those prohibitions would remain in effect. Schools have already started to partner with companies to help athletes navigate the landscape of NIL and build their personal brands. Several college athletes, some with huge social media followings, already have plans to profit once the rules change on Thursday.
It's the world in which we live. I mean, you know, there's the Supreme Court taking a firm stand mm-hmm. against the monopoly, the NCAA, which has controlled the lives of athletes and exploited it and been enriched by it for decades. Now the athletes are more in control. I don't know what it will end up being. There'll be a handful that'll be probably making a lot of money, and well, the other athletes will probably be you know, pretty much the same way, but I don't know how to predict what's going to happen.
You know, it's one of those things that where you remember when some like George Clooney signed on to renew for ER, and they said, well, he's getting $7 million an episode, and everybody went up and just infuriated. Oh my God, how could anybody make $7 million an episode? And then you note that NBC is making like $80 gazillion per episode, and you think, well, yeah, so why shouldn't the guy who's the face of the show get a piece of the profit?
Yeah, and you wonder if the NCAA is actually going to end up making more money because their athletes become household names. They'll be on sneaker brands, and there'll be all kinds of promotions that promote the athletes, and more people will be interested in college sports, and it could end up being that way too.
I predict lots of scandals ahead. Many of the rules that are in place, you know, at the school and state level derive from the NCAA rules. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, NCAA or NCAA.
And that will change now that those rules have changed. And I do suspect that there'll be bidding wars with goods and services for the most talented athletes. We're going to be reading about this for years to come.
Yeah, I don't know how small colleges are going to be able
to
recruit.
Compete?
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm sure these student athletes are going to get a really good education.
Oh, yeah. Academia really got
and,
away.
And when they're on the verge of failing and the professor's not going to be pressured to pass them, even though perhaps they were not the most diligent academics.
So, I mean, I don't mean to be like... I'm with you, but the cynical part, like, that wasn't the case anyway, right? I mean,
that was already a problem.
I mean, that was already, like, they sort of just did away with that a long time ago.
But it's going to get worse. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's a distinction between college sports and professional sports now with these rules. I mean, I'm not for exploiting student athletes, okay? But there are a lot of people who skip college and go right to the pros. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is getting blurrier.
It's amazing to me that the problem is that these were billion-dollar organizations that were making money hand over fist. And then the problem became the students instead of everyone making mm-hmm. so much money off. Like, should a college be making that kind of money off mm-hmm. of its sports program instead?
Yeah. And what do they do with the money? Do they plow it into improving the academic standing of the school? Or
is it a make or break. I mean, it is a make or break for some colleges.
It's a major revenue
Gonzaga,
source.
The college mm-hmm. in Washington State, before their team went to the NCAA about 15, 20 years ago and repeatedly went back there, the number of applicants they had was a quarter of what it is now. Mm-hmm. They were able to recruit more and grow as a college. Because their name is out there. And that's true here, you know, with Siena College, you know. I mean, it's a reputation thing.
I'm struck by what you said, Rosemary, early on, that you expect more scandals.
And
one of the things that came to my mind, and I don't disagree with you, but one of the things that came to my mind, I'm almost wondering if the companies will hold some of the student athletes to a higher standard than the schools did.
Good point. Yeah,
I mean, as far as their behavior,
they're more sensitive to the scandal. But Judith is right. The distinction, the line, where is it now? It's not just blurry; it's gone. You go to college and you're a professional athlete, and you know this has become. I never understood how did our Olympic basketball team was.
They
like,
just dropped the requirement in the U.S. Olympics.
You didn't have to be an amateur anymore.
You didn't have to be an amateur. So that whole distinction.
But the Dream Team did not win the gold. gold medal every
Isn't
year.
Isn't that interesting?
Every 4 years. Yeah, that was the amazing thing to me.
So, she's not, but Serena could go and
play tennis.
Play tennis and represent the United States. Yeah.
Right. Just a P.S., there's a great Olympiad out of Averill Park High School. Rudy, I know his last name. Help me.
Right, he's a javelin thrower, isn't he?
Yeah. And he's the world record holder.
Rudy Winkler.
Winkler. Yes, yes, we know the family. I'm so embarrassed. So Rudy Winkler, watch him in the Olympics this summer. He's cool. The pride of Rensselaer County.
He does the hammer.
The local guy.
The hammer.
Yeah, the hammer, yeah.
Oh, the Times Union covers him.
Yeah. And why not?
Well, they should cover him.
I think he's the only local guy.
Even more.
Every 4 years, all the press tries to find local connections to the Olympics.
Well,
team.
Now we
this
have
is
one
this
from
is
Rensselaer
it.
County,
yeah,
Rudy
yeah.
Winkler.
Why
and his
is
wonderful
there an Olympics
family.
Anyway, though? If we're going to bring this up.
Oh, I agree with you. You know,
I would
I
not want to go.
This can is, of worms opening. Yeah.
Well, they won't let you go anyway this time.
My wife and I have been obsessed with watching the Olympic trials.
Uh-huh.
Just obsessed with watching the Olympic trials. We've watched everything. And it's
gymnastics.
Great. And this is what we keep on saying to each other is, well, now it should just end here.
Yeah.
We should just end it here. It should. They then don't put those poor kids on a plane and send them to Tokyo. That doesn't seem right.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
Yeah. You wonder what's going to happen over there with the number of cases, especially with the Delta variant now.
Right.
It is, we're in it now, right? There's no going back, I assume?
We're in it, I totally hear what you're saying. I am a COVID hawk, but at the same time, you have these young people I'm very careful about COVID. You have all these young people who've spent years getting ready for this moment, and it's up to them whether they go or not, right?
No, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. I just...
You're worried for them.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and I'm worried for everybody there. I mean, I just, you know. Wonder what's going to come out of it.
I know. And do they have a Dr. Fauci who's going to be creating the rules?
And you've seen, I guess you have all seen the pictures of what Tokyo did and looks like now as a result of the infrastructure, if you will, of what they put in place to host these games, which is just unbelievable. Which will only be used by, 20%, I think?
Yeah, which is why you should always have the Olympics in the same place.
Yeah,
every year,
maybe there
so you don't have
from now
to,
on.
Yeah, just
they have
make
such
them the
new
permanent
facility.
Spot. So you don't have to rebuild all this infrastructure every 4 years in
Agreed.
New cities.
All right, we are just about out of time.
No.
I know. Any final thoughts, anybody?
I'm so glad to see Judith here today, along with the other wonderful panelists, because Judith, we really do need you around here.
It's fun to be here. Thank you.
Name tags. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. Alan, always a pleasure. Thank you
very
much.
What do you
mean
name tags? Okay, I got it.
No,
you think I don't know who Rosemary is and who Mike is?
No, I did, but she said.
Yeah.
The other
panelists.
Wonderful panelists.
Well, I did it to cover myself.
I'll never forget what's her name.
All right. He's Alan Chartok. He's Mike Spain. She's Judith Hank.
I am.
She's Rosemary Armeo. I thank you all. We'll be back
thank
after
you.
This.